It made a huge difference when my directory profile started sounding like me. Because I think the very first one I did sounded like somebody else's idea of what a counsellor should be. And I, you know, when I first qualified, it was just post-COVID and we'd all grown our hair out because we hadn't been able to have a decent haircut. And I think I looked like somebody else's idea of what a counsellor should look like. I had a very sensible grey bob and I was dressing very conservatively for work. And now I've given up and I do turn up and be congruent. And I've got pink in my hair, I wear my jeans and my DMs, and my directory sounds a lot more like me.
Today I'm welcoming Fee. Many of you will know Fee Hookin from our Good Enough Counsellors group. She's a really helpful person who often contributes there. Fee's also been a member of my Therapy Growth group, and I've invited Fee along today to share how she's made her private practice work. And I don't know how much of her backstory Fee would like to share, but I think Fee's sort of, like many of us, not come from the easiest of starts, and Fee's really managed to make her private practice work, and I just think that's a really encouraging thing for anybody who might be thinking, I can't do it. So Fee, tell me what you thought about setting up in private practice when you were about to embark on it.
Well, I didn't think that I could, but all the way through this counselling journey, I didn't think I could. I left school with three O-levels, and one of those was art, and it was utterly useless. And I'd grown up being told that I wasn't clever, I wasn't academic. I grew up on a council estate. You get a job in the shop around the corner, and you get a flat next to your mum. You don't go and become a professional. Yeah. So going to uni, I thought I would only do, I was just going to do the diploma because I couldn't possibly get a degree. And then I went on to do the degree. And then I thought, well, I'll have to go and work for somebody because I won't be able to run my own business, even though I had run my own IT business before that. And then I thought, actually, no, I can't go and work for somebody because nobody will employ me, so I'll have to go and start up in private practice. It was just this long litany of I can't, but managing to do it anyway.
I'm going to pause just there and interrupt and say, you know, you went from I'll do a diploma because I can't do a degree to I'll do a degree. Yeah. And let's just remind people what you got in your degree.
I got a first.
Yeah.
I did actually get a first.
Congratulations. I just want to sort of, you know, for that to be on record. And you probably wouldn't say it unless I'd asked you, but I'm going to claim your bragging rights here.
Thank you. When it came up on the screen, there was a little mark that said a one, and I thought it was a bit of chocolate chip cookie. And I cleaned my computer screen because I thought I couldn't possibly have pulled that off.
Fantastic. Congratulations. Yeah. So, I mean, it was quite difficult for you sort of early on in your life, as you say. You didn't get much encouragement.
No.
So what brought you to the counselling profession?
A friend of mine was doing his training. And we'd been friends for a long time and we'd been through quite a bit together. And honestly, I looked at him and I thought, dear God, if he can do it, maybe I can.
Is he going to be listening into the podcast?
Yeah, he is. And he's going to shoot me for this. And I sat down with him one night. He and his wife had come around for dinner. And I said, yeah, it sounds so fascinating. It sounds so interesting what you're doing. Do you think it's something I could do? And he said, yeah, you absolutely could. And I was in therapy myself at the time. So I went and spoke to my therapist and went, yeah, do you think I could do this job? Do you think I could do it? And she said, if you work on your own stuff enough, because there was quite a bit of it, my family were very dysfunctional and there was lots of abuse. She said, if you work on enough on that stuff enough, you will make an excellent therapist.
Yeah.
And she was my turning point. If she had said, oh, no, I don't think so, I would never have done it. And that is the example of counsellors making huge differences. I don't even know if she knew at the time what a huge difference just that comment made.
What an impact. Because it's about recognising your potential.
Yeah, and believing in me.
Yeah, that you could do it. And all you needed to do was just work on that stuff. Well, not all you needed to do, but...
Yeah. It was an ongoing process. Still is.
Yeah. So do you think that the experiences that you had growing up and the sort of things that happened to you. Do you think that's had an influence on how you are as a therapist?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I've been around the block a few times. As I said, my childhood was dysfunctional. My first marriage was full of domestic violence and drug abuse. Mm-hmm. And then I was a single mum for a long time with two small boys. I guess I don't shock very easily.
Yeah.
I think I bring an authenticity to my work. I also swear far too much while I'm working, but I have put that on my website as a disclaimer. And
that's really good. And how do you find people respond to you when you do swear?
They're fine. They're absolutely fine. Either they feel that they're comfortable and then they can swear, or I have a lovely client who said, I don't swear, but I love it when you do. It makes me feel better. I was like, I will swear for you then.
I think there's something about that, isn't there? I mean, I used to find swearing actually quite a useful thing because and I think you're the same. You know, we come from sort of, you know, the sort of Guildford area. We speak quite nicely because that's part of...
I can do. I can sound quite posh.
Yeah, that's it. And I think sometimes that means that people think they can't... that we might be shocked or, you know, we might be... Yeah. You know, it might be, oh, no, I wouldn't swear. So sometimes I think, especially with me, you know, living in Essex, it actually was a real sort of bridge builder in a sense. If I was prepared to swear, because people think, oh, that's all right. She's...
She's ordinary.
That's it.
She's normal.
Despite the bit of the posh accent.
And I work with a lot of people who've been through significant trauma. And sometimes the only reaction is, well, that really was shit.
Yeah.
That was awful. Because it is. And no other words are going to do that.
Yeah.
And it acknowledges just how horrific some things are. Mm-hmm. You know, saying something is a little tricky really doesn't quite cut it.
Yeah, it's just acknowledging that depth. And also I think there's something around, you know, when you use a swear word, it also can get across the anger as well, can't it?
Yeah.
And I think often people feel that they maybe can't express anger, or it's difficult to express anger about it. And I think it's very releasing for people to know that you actually get it and that you feel the sort of it's at a visceral level, really, that it makes you want to swear.
Yes, and I think some of my clients need permission to be angry. They need to be told, actually, yeah, what happened to you is awful and you are allowed to be angry.
Yeah.
Especially with women, we're socialised to not show anger, to not shout, to keep things inside, to be nice. And when we're talking about abuse and violence, it's not okay. You don't have to be nice.
It's not a nice thing that happened, is it? No. And do you think there's something as well about, there's a regaining of your power as well in this, isn't there? You know, when you're able to express really what you feel, then that helps you to regain some of your power in that situation, a sense of control.
Yes, it does. It really does empower. I've seen it empower people. And I encourage my clients, if they want to throw cushions or storm up and down the counselling room, and they go home absolutely exhausted and come back the following week and go, do you know what, I felt so much better for that. I feel stronger.
Yeah. Because it can be a very exhausting process as well, can't it?
Yeah.
I know when I've had a particularly difficult counselling session, as in I'm the client, that you come away, you feel completely wiped out by it, don't you? So, Yeah.
I used to come home and have a nap. I was working through some things about child sexual abuse, which came up at the end of my training. And I would just come out absolutely wiped out and need to lie down.
Yeah, because it's just so powerful and so strong, having to process all that stuff. Yeah.
It turned my world upside down, and I will be forever grateful for having a therapist who could hold a safe space for
that. So tell me about the work. So do you work mainly with people who've experienced abuse or trauma?
I work mainly with people. I fell into a niche. We talk a lot, don't we, about what's your niche? And I fell into mine because I was having clients, even when I was training, they would sit there and say, well, there's something I've never told anyone else. And as a trainee counsellor, that makes your blood run cold.
The owner, what's coming?
So here we go. And my biggest fear was that I wouldn't be I needed to be as good a counsellor for them as my therapist had been for me. And my biggest fear was I might mess it up or re-traumatise them. And this happened quite often with clients saying, there's something I haven't told anybody. This happened to me when I was a child. So at that point, I went off and did some extra training with the very brilliant Dr. Mark Widdowson through the Link Centre. And it is awesome. If anyone wants to do trauma training, that is the one to go to. It is so good. And he gave me a lot of skills to be able to help people, to help them process trauma memories. And that, in a nutshell, is how I ended up becoming a trauma therapist, because, and I still got so much to learn, but it was mainly because I didn't want to make people feel anything.
Yeah. So tell me how you get clients then for your private practice, if you're working in that
field.
Well,
I was thinking about that when you asked me to do this. And I think what I did in the first place is I did all the things. I think it's really important to get on the directories, obviously. And it doesn't have to be perfect. Mm-hmm. It just has to have your name on it and what you do. Because nobody's going to find you if your stuff isn't out there.
That's number one step, isn't it?
So get on the directories and then have a website. Yeah. And I did all the things that we talked about when I had a session with you, and it was like, tell all your friends, which is really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I found that dreadful. I was on all the directories. I built the website. I did a lot of stuff on Facebook because I know how to do Facebook.
Yeah. Just remind people what your Facebook title is.
It's Fiona Hukin Counselling. And I just kept it really nice and simple. And thought, I could spend weeks trying to think up of a clever name.
But just keep it simple.
But I thought to keep it simple. And also, we talk about congruence, don't we? And turning up and being our authentic self. Well, my authentic self is I am Fiona Hukin. The only difference, the move I made away from congruence is I prefer Fee. But on all of my literature and everything on the website, I put Fiona. Because it sounded more grown up.
That's maybe a bit of the old imposter syndrome coming in there.
It was. Absolutely. Yeah. It's like, oh, no.
I've got a sound.
I think I've changed it now. I think, I have. My About Me page now says I am Fee. But for the first year, it said, my name is Fiona.
And when do clients know you now as Fee? When do they call you Fee?
Yeah,
you've got that connection.
Because I always joke and say, when anyone calls me Fiona, I look over my shoulder for my mother.
I used to be like that with Josephine, but I've got used to it now. So tell me a bit about sort of setting up. Was it difficult to get started? As in, did you... Because I was thinking, because you used to have a business, didn't you? You said you had a business. It was IT.
Yeah, I used to teach... I say I used to teach IT. I used to teach people how to use Microsoft Office. So a lot of my time was spent teaching little old ladies how to send emails. It was a great job. I loved it. And it was... That's what I was kind of doing when I decided to become a counsellor, because it was empowering people that really... I really loved about it.
Yeah, helping people actually use that sort of stuff.
Yeah. So setting up in business, I had an idea. What I got was your checklist of all the things that you need to do to set up to be a counsellor. And I just sat there with the checklist and went through all of it. Yeah. So thank you for that. It was really helpful.
And I think it is in the show notes for anyone who wants to download it. So yeah, go on.
I worked through it literally step by step. I hadn't heard of the ICO, but I found it on the list, so I went and found them and I registered with them, and I just literally went through it step by step.
Yeah.
Because if I thought about the whole big picture, I would probably have panicked and still not have a practice.
Yeah, so just take it step by step. How long did it, can you remember how long it took you to do that? How long, did you get everything set up before you started, or did you just start and then...
What happened for me is I was working with my local community centre and we set up a charity to offer affordable counselling in the community, because a lot of people can't afford mental health care. So I was already doing that, so I was seeing clients that way. And then after I qualified, which was in the July, I think I saw my first private client in about the September, October time.
So, yeah,
it took about 3 months.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it took me that long to work out how to build a website and host it. Because although I taught people how to use Word, I had no idea about hosting a website.
Yeah. So I was going to ask you about that, if you how you actually set it up. Did you use a particular service? Or
I used Wix because it's easy. Wix isn't great for a search engine optimization. It's not great for getting you on the first page of Google.
Yeah.
There used to be a joke in IT circles, is how do you hide a website? Put it on Wix.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But it is easy to use, as are ones like GoDaddy, and, you know, they're just click and drag. If you can follow a recipe, you can build a website.
Brilliant. I love that. I might quote you on that.
It's not odd. If I can do it, it's not odd. I got caught up with, I need to do all the SEO and the optimization for it.
Yeah.
Actually, I've discovered you don't. You really don't, because what you need is a link. Most things that come up, when you search counsellor in my area into Google, you will get one of the big directories. You will get counselling directory, Psychology Today, possibly the BACP. People then find you and use that to go to your website.
That's it, yeah.
So you don't need to be on the first page of Google with your website. I lost a good 3 months of my life trying to understand SEO that I will never get back.
I remember you telling me about it. Yeah, I was very impressed with you doing it.
Yeah, I don't think it made any difference though, Jo.
Oh, right.
To be fair.
But you are blogging though, aren't you? That's one of the things you do. Yeah. How's that gone for you? You know, is it difficult to get started on blogging?
I love it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't hard to get started because I have a lot of ideas, a lot of passion, and I like writing. So I think with any kind of marketing that you do the bits you like doing.
Yeah.
If you don't like writing, don't try and do a blog. Go and do pictures on Instagram.
Yeah. Or a podcast.
Or a podcast, yes. I like writing, so yeah. I do blogs.
That's it. And do you find that people will refer to your blogs, you know, when they phone you up or get in contact with you?
Yeah, I've had quite a few people say, I read your article and it really struck a chord with me. And I'm then sitting there thinking, I wonder which one they read.
Yeah.
Because I've written quite a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, oh, I'm really glad you liked it. What bit in particular did you like? So they might give me a clue.
Yeah, because that might give you a clue as to actually what's going on in their life as well. Yeah.
So for me, it was about doing all of the things and working on the marketing was a case of, if I chuck enough mud, some of it will stick.
Yeah, and you found that that's worked.
Yeah.
And you got in contact with me, didn't you? Because you wanted to improve your directory, I think. That was it.
The first one I did with you was the how to write your directory.
Yeah, the make
your profile
work.
Because I really, like most people, I really struggled with it. I found it very helpful. I didn't have the trauma thing happening at that point.
Yeah.
It was just starting, I think. So you talked about writing for your ideal client. Because when I first started, like most people, I would have taken anybody who had enough money to pay me.
Absolutely, yeah. And we still do, yeah.
Yeah. I've still got to put food on the table. But this was about writing for your ideal client. What did your client need? What does your client want to hear? And one of the things that was very useful as well, apart from that with you, was I had an old uni friend of mine and we swapped our directory drafts and went through it to find, I'm not even sure I can use the words that we used on your podcast, but to find the counsel-y terms.
Yeah, the psychobabble, I tend to call it. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we called it something else.
Something else.
It was quite rude.
It begins with C and ends with P, probably.
Yes. To just find the stuff that just sounded a bit up its own backside.
Yeah.
And asking ourselves, how many people actually use the word congruent in real life?
People don't, do they?
No, we use it in counselling all the time.
Yeah.
So she was there going, why on earth have you put I am congruent? No one's going to know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So it's quite helpful to have that second pair of eyes on it.
And we went through looking for those counselling terms that we'd spent the last 5 years learning and stripping them out. So if Ellen is listening to this, thank you for that, love. I do appreciate it.
And what difference did it make to your practice once you'd got that directory written and sorted out?
It made a huge difference when my directory profile started sounding like me.
Yeah.
Because I think the very first one I did sounded like somebody else's idea of what a counsellor should be.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
And when I first qualified, it was just post-COVID, and we'd all grown our hair out because we hadn't been able to have a decent haircut.
Yeah.
And I think I looked like somebody else's idea of what a counsellor should look like. I had a very sensible grey bob, and I was dressing very conservatively for work.
Yeah.
And my directory entry sounded like that person. And now I've given up, and I do turn up and be congruent, and I've got pink in my hair, I wear my jeans and my DMs, and my directory sounds a lot more like me.
You've just got that freedom and confidence to be yourself.
I think it takes a little bit of time.
Yeah.
It does take
confidence, doesn't it? Yeah. Yeah. I think we're very scared at the start, aren't we, of doing something wrong.
Oh, terrifying.
Well, I think so much depends on it, doesn't it? Because, you know, we put everything into, I'm going to start up in private practice, and then we sit there waiting for people. And it's a really horrid, sort of scary time, isn't it?
It is very scary. And I remember thinking nobody will ever come. And if a client left, that would be it. I'd never work again. But I do remember getting my first client booked in.
Yeah.
And doing a happy Snoopy dance around my living room.
Fantastic. And how did it feel to get paid by your client?
Oh, that was so weird. It was so weird. On one hand, it felt great to get paid because I've trained for years to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, it felt dreadful taking money off them.
Really interesting.
There's that feeling that we shouldn't get paid for doing good things.
Yeah.
So, it was very... And I think I pitched my fees too low.
Right,
I started at sort of £50.
Yeah.
After a year, it went to 55. I've only recently gone to 60. And actually, my supervisor keeps telling me that I'm not charging enough. I am in a privileged position, and I recognise that privilege, that my husband's still working and we don't have a mortgage. So I'm earning enough, but probably not charging my value.
And is there a part of you as well that, you know, coming from that sort of maybe working class background, mm-hmm. that finds almost like the amount you're charging seems like, wow.
Yeah, absolutely. While I was doing my training, I was working in my friend's clothes shop.
Yeah.
And I loved working for her. She was great fun and she was very accommodating. But I was earning, £10 an hour.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I'm charging how much? But I'm utilising very different skills.
That's it. And also you probably... That's £50-60 an hour has to cover a lot of stuff, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And that's why, having 16 to 20 clients, I think at one point the BACP said was full-time. And it is.
Yeah. What's comfortable for you in terms of your clients?
I would say between 18 and 20.
Right, yeah.
If I go to 20, especially given the type of clients I tend to see, which tend to be quite complex, if I go to 23... my right eye starts to twitch and I go overtired.
You know, you've taken on too many clients when your eye starts twitching.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. Like, okay, I have to shut this down.
Yeah. So how do you work out seeing, say, somewhere between 16 to 20 clients a week? How does that work out? Or is it that some of them are more fortnightly or monthly?
Okay, I work 4 days a week. I work Monday to Thursday. I have Fridays off and that is absolutely ring-fenced. I don't see clients on Friday.
Yeah.
So I rent rooms, some at the community centre down the road. I don't know where I'm pointing. You don't know where I'm going. So somewhere down, I work in the community centre down the road and I rent a room there.
Yeah.
I also rent a room at a lovely place called The Eaves in Hazelmere.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that.
And they have rooms, Hazelmere, Godalming, Farnham, Guildford.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's all very... It's very tasteful, rather posh at the Eaves. We quite like it. And they have very nice biscuits. So I see clients there. So I will rent a block of 4 hours.
Yeah.
So I will see clients. I will see four clients back to back in that block.
That must be quite tiring.
It is. But you know what? We had to do it while we were training, when I had a lot less skills than I have now.
See, I think sort of like it sounds like you can handle it and you're used to it and you just get on with it, really.
Yeah, where I rent at Hazelway, at the community centre, I rent the day or an afternoon and I'll put more breaks into that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I can.
Space.
Because I'm not paying by the hour as such, so it's a lot easier.
Yeah. Do you find this is just curiosity, really, but do you find different people are attracted to the different places where you work? Like when you work in a community centre, does that attract a different type of client to when you work?
Do you know what? It doesn't. I thought it would. And I do say to people who come to the community centre, because sometimes it can be a bit noisy.
Mm-hmm.
And the lovely lady who does the flamenco class next door, there's a lot of stomping. I do say to them, I said, I've got much posher rooms up the road if you want to come on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
And they normally just go, no, this is fine. And the flamenco ladies always sound like they're having a great time.
Yeah. It's going to hear the old castanets going off in the background. Yeah.
And stamping and living room.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
So I thought it would attract different clients, but it doesn't seem to have done.
Yeah. And I think it's really interesting, isn't it? Because people are coming to see you for you. And I think we worry so much about, you know, what does our room look like? Is it quiet? Does it look as though it's run down or whatever? But people they found out enough about you that they think this is the woman for me and I want to see her.
If you have that therapeutic relationship and that sense of safety,
yeah,
it's nice to have a nice posh room, but it's not essential.
And I think there's something around you're actually almost establishing that relationship with them in advance of the first session with them, because people are getting to know you, because you're putting your authentic self out there. People actually get to know the real fee. And yeah, I think that goes a long way to helping people feel comfortable with you.
I hope so. And I also do a free 20-minute assessment call. And I know some people don't like doing free anythings, and they don't like, but it works for me because it gives us a chance to sound each other out.
Yeah.
It allows them to see who I am and whether they'll feel comfortable with me.
Yeah.
And it gives me a chance to work out if I can be of help.
Is there anything you found difficult about being in private practice?
Balancing my workload. Because when I first started out, I meant to say I did some EAP work as well. The pay is dreadful, but at least it's some pay.
Yeah, that's
and
it.
I would do that of an afternoon online. And at that point, it becomes very easy to overbook yourself and have too many clients. And that's when the eye starts going.
Right.
And I realise that 23, 25 clients a week doesn't work for me. The other thing I find difficult is it can be all consuming, especially in that first year.
Yeah.
It was all I thought about.
Yeah.
It was all I talked about.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of what I was going to do next and this course and that course.
Yeah.
And it can be quite difficult to keep a balance. I'm very lucky I ride my friend's horse.
Yeah. I was going to say, what do you do? Yeah.
I ride an opinionated, flouncy Spanish horse called Chiquita.
Yeah.
And she keeps me. She is the definition of being mindful.
Because you have to be.
Because I have to be present. Otherwise, she shoots off round the common. And I'd still be doing laps round Thursday Common now.
Yeah.
So, and my friend Sam, who owns her, she's very supportive of what I do. And she knew me through my training.
Yeah.
But we just go out and we talk about the horses. And we talk about life in general. Yeah. And lots of other stuff. So it's nothing to do with work.
I need to talk about how you have to muck her out as well, don't you? So,
oh, yeah, because everybody loves shoveling horse poo in the pouring rain.
Yeah.
Because this winter has been brutal.
Yeah, I bet. But there's sort of something very grounding about that, I should think.
Well, technically, yes. Depends how cold it is, Joe.
So do you find sort of like, this is more of a sort of personal question, really, but do you find that you carry some of that stuff that your clients tell you? Because all I was thinking was, I used to sort of dance a lot to try and get it out of my systems. I was sort of wondering if you're sort of basically shoveling shit, you know, if that sort of helps with that sort of process.
It does. Yes, I do carry it. Mm-hmm. I try not to, but you can't not.
Mm-hmm.
You can't hear some of the things that we hear as therapists and not be impacted by it. In fact, I'd suggest if you're not impacted by it, you might be in the wrong job. Because some of it's awful. What do? I dance. I bounce around the lounge. I have a special shower gel that I use after work.
Really?
And it's really strong smelling. It's a very orangey smell. And it's to wash work off.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing to hear.
Because I was, you know, I was getting quite tense and quite anxious. And I realised it was because I'd had a really heavy couple of weeks with work. And I needed to symbolically wash it all away. And I paint as well. I paint very bad watercolours.
No, not very bad, actually. I've got one on my wall.
Oh, some of them are okay. Some of them look like my grandson did them. So that's really, that's really helpful because, again, it concentrates the mind. It shuts the noise down. I've recently been confirmed as having ADHD, mm-hmm. and I've realised that's what the noise is.
Yeah, sort of like this constant chatter.
Yeah. Just stuff. Yeah. All the time. So painting, riding, anything that keeps me focused.
Yeah.
Shuts the noise down.
So, with the trauma, it's quite an umbrella term, isn't it? I'm just going back to thinking about your directory and how you've managed to communicate to people that that's sort of what you work with. Do you sort of talk about abuse or what sort of things do
I'm
you say?
I'm a bit careful about it because I know that for me, I knew I'd had an abusive childhood and that it wasn't good. I had blocked the fact that I'd been sexually abused, and that only came to light for me many years later.
Right.
In my directory, I just say, did you have a difficult childhood? Is the impact of that still affecting you now?
Yeah.
Would you like to talk about that?
And do you find that you appeal to mainly women, or do you get a whole range of different
genders? I do have mainly female clients. I do have some male clients.
Yeah.
And some non-binary ones.
Yeah.
But it's mainly women. We have a long history of patriarchy.
Yeah.
And women are ones who end up coming to me.
So do you find as well that you're working with people for quite a long time because of the sort of nature of the work?
Yes, I do. Quite often 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
And some of my clients might be here for even longer. And I'm here for as long as they need me to be. Some people come, we do some, if it's a one-off trauma, if it's something like a car crash or an assault, whatever, we can do that. We can actually sort that and help them process those memories really quickly. In 6 weeks, they're going, oh, do you feel great?
Brilliant.
All right, give us a shout if you need me again, and off they go.
Yeah.
And that's fantastic. But very different to, that acute trauma is very different to sort of complex trauma.
Yeah, the stuff
that's childhood.
So, have you got any advice to anybody who's starting out, do you think?
Believe in yourself. You can do more than you can possibly imagine.
Yeah.
Just keep putting one foot in front of the other.
Yeah.
Do all the things. Get your list. Work through the list.
Yeah.
It will work. I am in an area, we're just south of Guildford. This place is awash with therapists. If you put my postcode into counselling directory, you come up with something like 130 therapists.
Not that you've counted them.
All of them. All of them. You can do it.
Mm.
You can do it. I think it would be very difficult to stop a job and then start private practice and make a living straight away. If you're the sole earner, that would be hard.
Yeah.
But if you've got a bit of wriggle room, or you can work and do private practice for a bit, it is completely doable.
Yeah. And I think also with your sort of type of client as well, if you're working with people for as long as 2 or 3 years, you get that. You get sort of like a foundation, don't you? And then you're just adding people on top.
Yeah.
And then that can help to build you up. Whereas if you're doing very short-term work, obviously you have to keep recruiting.
Even with long-term work, I went in 2 days from being completely full to only a third full.
Wow.
I was like, what the hell just happened there?
Oh, my goodness. So tell us more about that and how you felt.
It's just like I'm going to have to go and work in Tesco's.
Yeah.
It was, people suddenly said, you know what, I can't afford this anymore, or I'm going to go to fortnightly, or I feel better, which is always great.
You know,
I think I'm done.
Yeah.
And that all happened over a space of about 3 days.
Goodness.
And I went from completely full to going, oh, bugger.
So sort of almost from sort of like 20 to around 6 or 8, something like that.
Yeah.
And
then it's trusting the process. It's trusting the counselling gods to send you your next lot of clients.
Yeah. Did you do anything extra to attract people?
Panicked.
That's an honest answer, yeah.
Yeah, I did actually. That's when I did a video recording to put on my profile directory, which was very effective, and I got lots and lots of inquiries.
Wow.
I still can't listen to it, though.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
If you want to watch it, watch Fee's thing.
Yeah, you lot go and watch it. Just don't make me look at it again.
Yeah. But that actually worked, that you found that people responded to that. Yeah,
it does. And I find that if I change the wording on my directories periodically, I see a lift in inquiries.
Yeah, because it just tells the SEO gods that this is a current piece of...
Yeah, this is a new bit.
This
and
is
they
a
like
new bit.
New.
Yeah, they do like new. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is a real pain because I really like my directory profile at the moment. I don't want to change it, but I'm going to have to go in and do something to it.
Yeah, go and add another of your qualifications.
Yeah, maybe.
And I just think it's really interesting, just going back, circling back to what you said about, despite the fact there's 130 other therapists in your area, you can still make it work. Because I think often people think, oh, you know, why would anybody want to come and see little old me?
I think that's exactly how I felt when I first started.
Yeah.
And what's changed now is there's 130 therapists in my area and none of them are me.
Yeah.
None of them have my unique approach.
Yeah.
And it's only unique because we're all unique.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not everyone's cup of tea. Mm-hmm. And that's all right. It's like I refer to colleagues and friends that are local if somebody looks like they want something different.
Yeah. I was wondering if you could tell me a bit about setting up your centre for people who can't afford to come for private practice therapy.
That was remarkably easy to do. Actually, mm-hmm. The lady who ran the community centre at the time managed to get us some funding from our local Hazelmere Rotary Club.
Yeah.
And they've been really supportive.
Yeah.
They were a little concerned to start with that I was such a new therapist. But I met with them and we had a chat and I managed not to swear or spill dinner down the front. So yeah. That was good. And they've continued to support us.
Yeah.
So what we do is we have a room within the community centre. And we went to the doctors, we went to the social prescribers, and we said, right, we've got this. And there's myself, there's my friend who was doing the training before me. I collared him and made him come and help us as well. And another lady who specialises in children and young people.
Yeah.
She's brilliant. And we wanted to set up a charity that had qualified counsellors in it, because most of the charities have people on placement who aren't fully trained yet, and we have to do placements, we know that.
Yeah.
But we wanted to offer qualified counsellors, and we have a waiting list.
Yeah.
As you would imagine, we're hugely oversubscribed, and we periodically have to close the waiting list.
Yeah, because you've got so many people on the waiting
list. I don't want people sitting on a waiting list for a year.
Yeah.
It's not fair.
Yeah. So it's better to say to them, sorry, we've just got no availability at the moment. Yeah. Yeah. Let them go somewhere. See if they can find somewhere else.
So we do that, and all four of us work 4 hours. We do 4 hours a week for Hazelway.
Yeah.
We get paid £30.
Oh, so you do actually get paid?
We do get paid. We don't get paid a lot, but we do get paid.
Yeah.
And the clients make a donation of what they can afford. And some people donate £40, some people donate £1.
So it's not dependent on their income.
No.
They can just come along. They're not asked. Is it only for people up to a certain level of income, or is it just
anybody? No, it's for anybody.
Yeah.
It's for anyone, and we just say to them, you know, if you're in work, we would suggest a donation of £30. But if you can't afford that, we can discuss it. And people pay what they can afford.
Yeah, and how does it work in terms of sort of like assessment and stuff like that? Would you see them, is it just that their name comes to the top of the list and then you just go through a normal assessment, or do you assess them before?
What we do is we assess them before we put them on the list.
Yeah.
So if we get them come in, Paul and I will split that between us. One of us will call them or do a Zoom call, do an assessment. And if we can be of use, then they go onto our waiting list.
Yeah.
If we can't, we then signpost them onto.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there are some things that they're either outside of our competencies as therapists, or they're just not suitable for therapy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we then refer back to GPs or.
Yeah. So that's sort of quite good in terms of your knowledge about what's going on in the local area as well, I should think.
It's
useful. You get to know.
You get to know a lot of people.
Yeah.
And the strangest thing is I went to the local food festival, which was at the end of my road on the green.
Yeah.
And somebody went, oh, I know you. You're on Facebook, aren't you? You did that counselling lark.
Yeah.
And I just froze and went, okay. It was so strange.
I mean, you know, you haven't mentioned the Facebook page very much, but, you know, people really like your Facebook page as well,
yeah,
don't they?
I have a surprising amount of followers on there, which takes me by surprise all the time.
I think it's because you're really real and you're you. Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. I post things that make me go, ooh, and that then generates three. And I do it on Facebook because I understand Facebook.
Yeah.
I get it. I do a little bit on Instagram, but I don't really get it. And it's not as good as a lot of other people.
Sometimes it just sort of can help signpost people towards you if they're looking. But I think, you know, there's a lot of people who are still on Facebook, despite what everybody says about Facebook. You can make Facebook pages work, I think.
I live in a small town. The entire town runs on Facebook. Yeah. You know, our local cafe near the Eaves where I was this morning, that was shut for the day. Everybody knew because he put a post up on Facebook.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, if it's not on the Hazelmere Community Board, it doesn't happen.
So you're probably known as the Hazelmere councillor for one of them.
One of the Hazelmere councillor people, yeah. And yeah. I got my picture in the local rag because I went and accepted a cheque from the Rotary. That was so odd. Really was. All of a sudden I'm sat in the grounds of some wonderful park. They've got a hot air balloon and I'm in my best clothes collecting a cheque.
Wow.
Trying not to spill my dinner down my front.
Yeah. But hopefully what you've done is enough, really, from what you're telling me.
It seems to be working. You know, I've got a full practice, and full for me is between 16 and 20.
Yeah.
I could have more. I'm turning online stuff away because I get too tired. I'm a bit rubbish after 5 in the evening, to be honest. And I want to sit on the sofa with a glass of wine.
Yeah, so you tend to see people during the day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's working. So I don't know why it's working, other than it is, so I'm not going to mess with it.
Carry on.
Yeah.
And then more videos if you suddenly go down to... Only a third.
Yes. Yeah, I'm saying all this now. Everyone could decide to leave by next week. You know, sometimes you get that sense that your client's almost done.
Yeah.
And then all of suddenly 3 or 4 of them will turn around and go, yeah, I think I'm done.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Okay.
Your sort of initial reaction is just to go, ah! Mm. And then, but then after a while, you sort of settle down again, don't you? And then see what you can do to try and... to get more clients in. Because I think that's the second time you came back to me, actually, was you had a bit of a gap, didn't you? And you said, oh, I just need to do a bit more.
That's when we had the proper one-to-one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was really, really helpful. And what it was, actually, was it was incredibly encouraging because you said, actually, Fee, you're doing all the right things. So I thought maybe there was something I was missing that everyone else, some secret everyone else knew about that I didn't. And you were so encouraging and so affirming. And I felt like you believed in me.
I do, yeah.
And I came out of there thinking, oh, Joe believes in me. I can do this. This is doable. And you did tell me to change the pictures on my website. And I'm looking at it thinking, I still haven't changed them.
Well, maybe I got that bit wrong then.
I don't like many photos of me, that's for sure.
Yeah. So has sort of running the private practice and having... you know, 15 to 20 clients a week sort of made a difference to your life, do you think?
Certainly in terms of financial security, it feels a lot better. It feels a lot better than earning 10 quid an hour. Yeah, I mean, we don't have to worry about the bills as much as we were because the kids have left home now, which makes life a lot cheaper. It was things like, I've always had knackered cars.
Yeah.
I've bought cars for under a grand, driven them into the ground until they died.
Yeah, literally.
And then got another one. Literally died, yeah. And the last one literally completely died. And I went to a car showroom and got a secondhand Mazda with a warranty.
Fantastic.
And everything. And believe me, having a warranty, big deal. Huge deal. And aftercare service and all the posh things that other people do, and I could afford to go and do, and that was with money that I'd
earned. Wow, that's amazing.
And I'm going away. I'm having an adventure.
Go on, tell us about that.
In May. I'm not particularly well travelled. When I've gone abroad, I've gone with my husband or my kids just to Europe. My son lives in Italy, so I'd go there a lot. And I'm not. I met strange people online in an art group.
Wow.
Who are absolutely lovely and have been here to visit me. So I'm going to go and see Diane and Laura in Minneapolis next month. I'm going to have to get on a plane on my own, which is the bit that scares me because I'm convinced I won't find it.
They do try and make it easy, I think.
I hope so. Everyone else will be having their pre-flight drinkies. I'll be sat there in front of the screen, staring at it, waiting for my flight to come up.
Yeah.
So in May, and that's entirely paid for out of my earnings.
Wow, amazing, yeah.
And it's damn expensive to fly to the States.
Yeah. I don't even know where Minneapolis is in the States.
It's north-ish.
Right.
And then we're going to go from her house up to Lake Superior, where we've rented a cabin.
Oh, wow.
And they called it a small cabin.
Well, America.
The living room's the same size as the downstairs of my house.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic.
It's going to be brilliant.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's my big adventure with my American pal.
Fantastic. I'm so pleased. Really pleased to hear.
Thank you.
Yeah. And you know, why not? That's what I think. It's really good. You know, you are earning the money.
Yeah.
You are working hard, actually. It is easy work.
I am working hard. And my kids have had adventures.
Yeah.
My kids have been travelling.
Yeah.
They've done adventurous things. You know, one climbs mountains, the other lives abroad.
Mm.
It's time for mum to have an adventure.
Yeah. Well, I hope you have a lovely time.
Also, keep an eye on Facebook. I will be posting so many photos.
Oh, I'm going to be
my only concern is getting eaten by a bear because we're going hiking.
Oh, wow.
They have bears.
Yeah, they do.
Goodness. Yeah, I know.
Well, hopefully you'll make it back safe and sound. Oh, brilliant. Well, thank you so much for coming along, Fi. I really appreciate it. And I'm sure people who are listening really appreciate it
too. Thank you for having me. I was absolutely thrilled to be asked.
That's brilliant. Thank you. So if people want to find you on your website, what's your web address?
My web address is Fiona Hukin Counselling, one word, .com.
Brilliant. Nice and easy to find.
And I'm on Facebook. Same thing.
Yeah.
Same thing on Instagram, but with underscores.
So we can find you quite easily.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant. Oh, well, thank you so much for coming along and for sharing all your knowledge with everybody.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Do come and join my Facebook community, Good Enough Counsellors. And for more information about how I can help you develop your private practice, please visit my website, josephinehughes.com. If you found this episode helpful, I'd love it if you could share it with a fellow therapist or leave a review on your podcast app. And in closing, I'd love to remind you that every single step you make gets you closer to your dream. I really believe you can do it.